I learned about the first loyalty test on a Tuesday. I did not recognize it as a loyalty test at the time. That is the point. He called it a briefing. It was a conversation in a conference room with no assistant present and no notes being taken, which I understood at the time to be a sign of trust. He said the organization needed people who understood that discretion was not just a policy, it was a philosophy. He said the people who rose in this environment were people who knew when to stay quiet and when to act, and that the two were not the same thing. I agreed. I went back to my office and prepared the morning briefing. I had never missed in 3 years of this role. I did not think about the conversation again until much later. Loyalty in institutional settings does not arrive as a demand. It arrives as an invitation. That is the first thing to understand. The demand comes later, after the invitation has been accepted so many times that refusal begins to feel like betrayal. By the time the demand arrives, you have already agreed to all the conditions that make it feel reasonable. The morning briefing was mine. I had built it. I had turned it from a procedural obligation into a tool. 15 minutes every day. Materials reviewed. Questions anticipated. No surprises. The people around me knew that if they wanted to understand what the organization was preparing for, they could read my briefing or they could ask me directly. That was the reputation I had built. That was the currency I thought I was accumulating. I want to tell you about the morning briefing now, because it is the thing I keep coming back to. There is a particular quality to institutional manipulation that separates it from the domestic or romantic variety. It is less personal and therefore harder to name. The person doing it does not necessarily dislike you. They may, in fact, find you valuable. The manipulation is not about you as an individual. It is about the role you occupy and the function you perform. You are useful to them. What they require is that you remain useful in the specific way that they define, and that you do not redefine usefulness on your own terms. The second test came 6 months in. A case had become sensitive in ways that required discretion that I was being asked to provide on behalf of a process I could not fully examine. I provided it. I told myself that working within an institution meant accepting that some processes would be opaque to me, and that my role was not to audit everything but to do my specific job at a high level. I told myself that every institution of this kind required this kind of professional trust. I was not wrong about that. I was telling myself the truth. The manipulation did not require me to believe something false. It required me to give priority to one true thing. Professional trust within institutions requires accepting opacity, and to give insufficient priority to another true thing, which was that opacity, in this context, was being used to exclude me from information I would have needed to make a fully informed choice about what I was providing discretion for. I went home that evening and read the briefing. I had not had time to attend that morning. Someone else had assembled it. The materials were fine. The format was familiar. It did not feel like anything, and that is what I should have noticed. The third test was the one where I felt it. The organization needed me to be publicly associated with a process that I privately believed was being mishandled. Not illegal. Not unethical. Exactly, in a way I could have pointed to clearly. Just off. The way something is off when the people around you are choosing their words too carefully and when your access to certain conversations gets quietly narrowed without anyone explicitly closing a door. I raised this concern in the way I had been trained to raise concerns privately, to the right person, using the appropriate channels. I was told that my concern had been noted. I was told that the situation was being managed. I was told that the organization valued my perspective and was grateful for my commitment. The morning briefing the next day had my name on it. I had written half of it. What keeps people in these arrangements is not stupidity. I want to be very clear about that, because the external narrative about situations like this is almost always framed as a question of intelligence or self-awareness, as if the person caught in the trap simply failed to see it. The trap works precisely because the person inside it is smart enough to construct a framework in which staying makes sense. Every loyalty test passed is evidence that the relationship is real. Every access maintained is proof that the commitment is mutual. Every briefing attended is a data point suggesting that the arrangement is reciprocal. The arrangement is not reciprocal. It is never reciprocal. This is the feature, not the flaw. The institution requires your loyalty to flow upward toward it. Its loyalty flows downward only as long as you are more useful inside the arrangement than outside it. The moment that calculation changes, the moment your usefulness to it becomes conditional on something you can no longer provide, or the moment someone else can provide the same usefulness at lower cost, the arrangement ends. It does not end with a conversation. It ends with a call from someone who is not the person you expected. I had been told through the particular grammar of institutional communication that people in positions like mine learn to read, that my days had a specific shape. I knew it before they told me formally. I had known it for weeks, maybe months. I had gone on attending the morning briefing, the one I had built, the one that now had other people's names in the margins, because stopping felt like admitting something I was not yet ready to admit. I was not ready to admit that the loyalty I had offered, which was real, had been functioning all along as a mechanism of my own constraint rather than a bond between equals. The call came from someone I did not recognize. The words used were professional and appropriate. The briefing that morning was prepared by someone else and delivered without me. Institutions that manage loyalty as a control mechanism do not do so through cruelty. That is the part that takes longest to understand. The process was designed to attract people with the specific combination of ambition, conscientiousness, and capacity for self-justification that I had. It needed those qualities in order to function. It used those qualities fully. And when it no longer needed them, when the function I had been performing could be performed by the next person with the same profile, or when the specific discretion I had provided had reached the end of its usefulness, it released me in the same professional, appropriate tone it had used to invite me in. The morning briefing was on my desk for 3 years. It had my name on it, because I put my name on it, because I was good at it, because I believed that the quality of my work and the reliability of my loyalty would protect me in the way that a good record protects you within a system that rewards good records. Systems that use loyalty as a leash do not reward good records. They reward continued usefulness. Those are not the same thing. And the difference between them is the entire explanation for what happened. I am not angry. That is the part I did not expect. I thought, when I imagined this moment before it happened, that I would feel betrayal. What I feel is something closer to recognition, the particular recognition that arrives when you finally see the structure you were inside clearly, now that you are outside it. It is a strange kind of clarity. I do not know what to do with it yet. Was the mistake trusting the institution? Or trusting that this institution was different from every other one that has ever asked for loyalty and offered access in return?